after they honorably discharged me. I came home to Angelo, being the don of the Salvatore family, married to Carmela, and a father to a kid, with a second on the way. He brought me in immediately, naming me his consigliere. The Salvatores are all I've had since my father passed. Otherwise, I'm alone. Something that Angelo has tried to correct, consistently berating me for ending the Capello bloodline with me. But I've made peace with that. He wants me to marry and have kids of my own. Or as I see it, marry and produce collateral for rival families to use against me. Angelo named me the godfather of all four of his sons, and that was enough for me. I helped raise those boys as if they were my own. I wanted nothing more than that. Since the moment I realized I was going to be a made man, I chose to be alone. The only life anyone can threaten is my own. And sometimes, that's not enough to scare a man whose insides are slowly rotting away. I have no death wish, but some days, I have no will to live either. Now, one little bird is going to ruin that for me. Not only is Genevieve my sole reason for living, but she's also the piece of shrapnel that I can't seem to remove. She's a weakness, and one day, she just might be the death of me. Angelo waves a hand and mutters, "Out of my face, Polly, and I don't want to see you again until you return with the money John Parsons owes me, and a smile on that ugly mug." The enforcer is out of Angelo's office in 2 seconds, leaving the three of us alone. Alfonso speaks first.
"John was playing against the Baldelli 2 nights ago, I hear. Managed to swindle him out of a grand, then lost it to Mo last night. Word is that Baldelli feels Mo reached in his pockets and stole the money himself. This John guy is causing more trouble than he's worth."
"He's worth the cost of the bullet that I'll lodge in his skull, the deadbeat,"
Angelo retorts. "Then what of his family?" I cut in. "His child." Angelo was a family man, and this is a cold way to remind him that John is not alone in life. His threat to Polly's wife is a threat he'll make good on, but not one he'll enjoy. Leaving a woman and a child alone without a man to provide for them is not something he'd get a kick out of either.
"What would you have me do, Ronnie?"
Angelo asks, annoyance in his tone as he splays out his hands to his sides.
"The man clearly doesn't give a damn about his family, and that alone is a reason to pop him."
"All I ask is you give him a chance," I reason. "A dead man can't pay you back, and his wife and kid don't deserve more trouble." Angelo grunts and puffs on his cigar, looking thoughtfully at the Proserpine painting on the opposite wall. He paid an obscene amount of money for it, and I'm convinced he holds it in as high a regard as his own wife.
"I may be a godly man, Ronnie, but I am not a patient one. His wife better pray he loves her enough to get his act together."
"I've never been a godly man, yet I pray he does too."
Chapter 16, The Raven, September 10th, 1944. 3 days. It's been 3 days since I've seen Ronaldo, and I'm at my wit's end waiting for him to appear again. Since I can remember, lying in bed with John felt like a duty as his wife, rather than an activity I craved. I always thought that was normal, though. I never knew different. I never knew there could be so much passion between two people. With John, sex was never unpleasant, but it didn't satisfy me the way it seemed to satisfy him. Every time he released inside me, I always wondered what he was experiencing. His trembling body and quiet grunts spoke of a pleasure far beyond what I felt. Now, intimacy with him would be unpleasant. I haven't allowed him to touch me since Ronaldo started coming around, and especially not after that awful June night. I still have nightmares about it, and he knows that, too. But sometimes I worry my refusal will cause him to snap again. He's attempted to reconcile multiple times, speaking of having needs. Before, I wouldn't have understood that need. Now I know exactly what he means, yet I can't find it in me to care. The only needs I do care about are mine and Rinaldo's. Worse yet, the stupid man leaves me hanging. How does he expect me to go on like this? How could he subject me to his electric touch and passionate kisses, yet leaving me starving for more? He's given me pleasure beyond what should be natural, but I can't help but crave more. For the first time in my life, I feel this cavernous emptiness between my thighs, begging to be filled, and only by him. He said he wants to take his time with me, make sure that I'm truly ready, despite the numerous times I've insisted I am. It's driving me wild. I'm already a terrible wife, but as of late, I'm a madwoman too.
Genevieve.
The sudden outburst of my name has a scream bursting from my throat. Panic and adrenaline zip through my system at a deadly rate. John stands before me, glaring down at me with annoyance. You scared me half to death, I gasp, clutching my aching chest. For the past hour, I've been staring out the bay window while Sarah reads on the couch. I must have gotten lost in thought.
I've called your name 3 times now. What has you so distracted lately? Shouldn't you be paying attention to your family?
He gripes, anchoring his hands on his hips. The insult burrows beneath my skin, but I don't give him the satisfaction of knowing that. I look over to the couch, where Sarah watches us with an apprehensive glimmer in her eyes. She rarely sees us fight, though lately that's been slowly changing. She's borne witness to the many times John and I have snapped at each other or glared through tense silences that stretched too long. I hate it. I hate it so much. And as hard as it is, I try to shield her from it as much as possible. I'm sorry, sweetie. I had an awful nightmare last night and got little sleep. I'm afraid it's made me a little spacey today. Though I paste on an apologetic smile, my stare is sharp, and my underlying meaning is clear. He knows exactly which nightmare I'm referring to. If he wants to cast stones at me, then I will show him I have a mean throw too. His spine straightens, and his chin lifts so he can stare down his nose at me with disapproval. Rage simmers in his gaze, but if there's one thing I can be sure of, it's that he doesn't like Sarah witnessing our destruction either.
Of course, dear.
He spits the word out like it's a rotten fruit.
All is forgiven.
I narrow my eyes, though I keep my smile firmly in place. Good. I chirp, breaking the tension and standing from my chair. I park my hands on my hips in an excited manner. Sarah, how about a game of Monopoly?
Or?
John cuts in, and it takes monumental effort not to glare.
Why don't you ride your bike downtown to the ice cream shop and pick us up a few pints? When you get back, we can play.
The bastard. Offering ice cream to Sarah is not only a clever way to get her out of the house, but one that is guaranteed to work. Our daughter has a sweet tooth, and she will never say no to. I'd love to, Sarah exclaims, jumping up from the couch, her book long forgotten. I sigh and drop my arms to my sides in defeat. Sarah bounds up to her father, splaying out her open palm with a jovial grin stretching wide across her face. Her cinnamon brown eyes sparkle when John drops a few dimes in her hand.
You know our favorite flavors, don't you?
John asks. Yep, she chirps, then skips off toward the foyer, hurriedly putting on her shoes and raincoat before running out the door. The ensuing silence is heavier than rainfall during a storm. John faces me, and all the resentment between us spills out onto the checkered floor from our stairs, our body language, and the curls of our upper lips. I'm tempted to ask him if we can even afford that ice cream, but I already know the answer. We can't. John will pay our bills, and within a month we will fall behind again, only to repeat the cycle and keep me in a constant state of worry about if we're going to lose the house or not. I set my journal on the footstool before me, drawing his attention to it.
What do you write in that journal that's so much more important than paying attention to your family?
He asks, though it sounds more like an accusation. I narrow my eyes, fury bubbling in my chest from his condescending attitude. The gall of you, I hiss, as if you haven't favored a bottle of booze over us countless nights. His teeth clench, the muscle in his jaw pulsing.
What are you writing about, Genevieve?
He asks again, ignoring my barb. My boring, uneventful life, I bite out. Why does it matter? I've written in a journal every single day for the past 16 years we've been together. He stares at the diary, resting on the footstool in front of my chair, and my heart sinks. He lunges for it, but I snatch it up before he can make it a step. How dare you? I shout, my heart racing while adrenaline and panic release into my system.
Give it to me now,
he barks, holding out his hand.
You've been acting suspicious as of late, and as your husband, it is my right to know why.
Suspicious? I screech. My days are no different than they've always been. The lie singes my tongue, but I don't dare let it show.
I just want to know what you're writing,
he assures, attempting to correct his voice to a soothing, placating tone. This is the one thing I have for myself, Jonathan. The one thing that is mine and only mine. And you want to invade that because of what? Because you're more drunk than you are sane and suddenly think it is I who has things to hide? You've been hiding truths from me for months, and you have the gall to accuse me? I take a step toward him, holding the journal to my chest. If you dare read this, I will never forgive you. Any hope of our having a marriage beyond a piece of paper forcing us together will crumble away. I will cease to love you, to care for you, to hold any part of you dear. This diary is all I have, and you will not take that away from me. Do you understand me? He's furious. It's visible by the way he fumes silently, clenching his fists until they bleach white as he glowers at me with resentment. Deep down, he can sense that I'm no longer in love with him, and while he may not realize it yet, he knows there's something wrong with me beyond being upset over his transgressions. I'm certain he doesn't know why I've strayed, but I'm sure there's a niggling feeling in the back of his head, warning him of my own betrayal. And I'm robbing him of the peace of mind that would accompany assuaging that feeling. I do feel guilty for that, truly. But I also know that if he were to find out, not only would Sarah suffer more than she already has, but also I might not survive it, considering his drinking and how hatefully he stares at me now. I don't trust him not to hurt me. He seems to deflate, though his gaze is still full of disappointment and anger.
You've changed, Gigi. I don't even recognize you anymore,
he whispers, giving me a once-over, as if I'm an otherworldly being. I'm the result of your betrayal, I respond calmly. His brows jump in surprise, then lower in anger.
How long will you make me suffer for a mistake?
A mistake. A mistake. Try several mistakes, John, I shout, baffled by his nerve. I hold up a hand and count off each point. You gambled away our entire life savings. You nearly made us homeless, our daughter homeless. You come home drunk nearly every night. You slept with me once, thinking I was another woman. And then last time, you forced yourself on me. By the time I'm finished, I'm heaving with rage. Not to mention all the times you've disrespected me and treated me like I'm below you. I thought you were better than that, Jonathan. You always said we were equals.
Well, we're not,
he roars, causing me to wince. His face reddens, and he takes a menacing step toward me.
We're not equals, Genevieve. I am the husband who goes to work 5 days a week for 10 hours straight. You have no idea what I deal with there, the amount of stress I'm under, not to mention the war going on. I have friends fighting right now, and I've no idea if I'm ever going to see them again. Then I come home, and I have to be a husband and a father. I have to make you two happy, buy you whatever you two ask for, hear about your days, and make sure the both of you feel loved.
I stare at him, utterly flabbergasted that he could diminish me so deeply. I do so much.
Ah, yes,
he exclaims sarcastically.
You clean an already clean house, and you cook. It's wonderful, Gigi, truly. Until it's the weekend, and I have to maintain the yard and fix a leaky faucet or hang another stupid picture on the wall. All the while, you sit in that goddamn chair, writing in your stupid journal and staring out at the trees.
His chest heaves, the last of his words echoing throughout the house. Fuming, I step toward him, my bottom lip trembling. You have such a terrible life, don't you? Your business is thriving, Jonathan. You're successful. You were bringing home more money than you've seen in your life, doing a job that you love. And you're right, there is a war going on, one that you don't have to fight in. You sit in your cushy chair in a skyscraper office with a beautiful view. Does it get a little stressful sometimes? Sure, but that's just called life, my dear. It's sure as hell a lot better than getting shot at, though, huh? I take another step, butting my chest against his. If you ever wanted to spend a night sober, you could come home to a hot meal waiting for you on the table and a beautiful wife. A wife that spent the last 2 hours helping her daughter with homework or soothing her because she has a mean schoolmate, all the while teaching her values and skills and nourishing her developing young mind. Before that, I spend my hours washing your filthy underwear, cleaning the house, grocery shopping, and ensuring there isn't a single chore for you to do when you get home. I'm so glad you're used to seeing a clean house, John, but that's not because you and Sarah don't make messes. It's because I'm constantly picking up after the two of you before you even notice. He opens his mouth to respond, but I hold up a finger. I'm not finished. Before you started drinking, you would come home after a long day of work and sit at the table to eat. And the only thing we asked you to do was listen, to have a conversation with us, to spend time with us. Is that really so much work? And I never ask you for anything except necessities for our daughter. You shove money in my hands because you expect me to look beautiful for you every day. The last time you came home to find me without a stitch of makeup and a pretty dress, you asked me why I stopped putting effort into my appearance. You said there's no point in having a beautiful wife if I'm not going to look like one.
I didn't say that,
he denies vehemently, but the truth is in his shameful stare. You did, I shout. You said you love to look at me, and that's why God gave me a pretty face and a smoking hot body, for your viewing pleasure. So I do it, John. I get all dolled up just for you. And when we go to bed, you turn off the lights, fuck me until you're satisfied, then roll over and go to bed. And oh, please, tell me the last time you fixed a single thing around this house. I ask you to spend a couple of hours mowing the lawn while I garden. Then you spend the rest of the day in your skivvies drinking a beer. So yes, John, your life is so darn awful that it's only fair you go off and gamble away all that hard-earned money until your family has no roof over their heads, drink until you don't recognize your wife, and terrify your daughter with your drunken ramblings. So you know what? If I want to spend an hour writing in my journal every day and staring out at the goddamn trees, then I will. I'm the one panting now, my cheeks flushed from having to defend myself to my own damn husband. His eyes close in defeat, and he turns away, hand on his hip, while the other swipes over his mouth in contemplation. It's silent for a few moments, while the two of us reconcile with the fact that our marriage will never be what it used to be. You're right, John, I say quietly. I have changed, and so have you. When he turns toward me again, heartbreak reflects in the downturn of his lips and the sadness in his eyes. And it hurts seeing him like this, especially when he's not the only one who's betrayed our marriage. And that's just it. We're destroying each other. The cold, hard truth is that he won't stop gambling and drinking, and I won't stop my love affair.
I won't allow you to divorce me, Gigi. Not with Sarah,
he states plainly. I bristle. While there's no malice in his tone, it feels as if he's locked a cuff around each of our wrists, chaining us together. My instinct is to rage against those confines, but I know I can't. Truthfully, I already knew that was my fate. It's frowned upon for a woman to leave a marriage, even more so when she's a mother. The courts would refuse me the divorce anyway, not unless Sarah and I were in grave danger, and even then it would be a battle that would cost us more than it may be worth. And despite the ways John has hurt me, he's always treated Sarah like a princess. Regardless of his recent missteps with her, their relationship is strong. It would be a lie to claim otherwise. But would John's selfishness tear apart this family like my selfishness could? It would destroy Sarah if she found out about my affair. And while I've fallen in love with Ronaldo, I will do anything for my daughter, even if it means I cannot love freely. I nod, though I couldn't muster a smile if I tried. A year ago, I would have rushed to him and cupped his cheeks between my palms while vowing we could get through anything together. I would have sworn that he was the love of my life and that I would stand by him through it all. Those promises escape me now.
I love you, Genevieve. Do you love me?
He asks softly. I love you, I whisper. Yet it's as hollow as the look in his eyes. Turns out, neither of us will stop lying either. September 10th, 1944. I haven't seen Ronaldo in 3 days. 3 days of wondering where he is, if something happened to him. My thoughts spiral. John and I got into a fight. He says I've changed, that I'm no longer the woman he fell in love with. I'm distant now. When he wants to have sex, I'm not interested. It's his own fault for that, and he knows it too. There's still so much guilt in his eyes, yet I can't find it in me to forgive him. I've begun to feel like my marriage is wrong and dirty. I've begun to feel like I'm cheating, but not on my husband. It feels like I'm cheating on my phantom. There wasn't much I could say to assure my husband I still love him, other than those 3 words. They've begun to feel empty when I say them. Based on the vacant look in his eyes, those 3 words have begun to feel hollow to him too. I'm losing my husband, slowly but surely. And I'm ashamed to admit that I don't mind that too much.
Chapter 17, The Phantom. September 11th, 1944. If Angelo knew I was here, I'd be swallowing his fist. I couldn't convince myself to walk away if I tried, though. I'm standing outside Parsons Manor, hiding in the shadows just beyond the tree line in front of the house. Paulie is also hiding in the woods, though he's about 10 feet ahead of me, stalking my woman. He's only following orders. If he weren't, it wouldn't be Angelo's fist flying down his throat, but a bullet. While Paulie wouldn't dare kill Genevieve, there's no guarantee he wouldn't rough her up, and anyone who inflicts pain on Mia Rosa will die. Simple as that. I don't want to ice one of Angelo's best enforcers, so it's vital I make sure he doesn't get that far. Beyond the tree line, Genevieve's daughter hurries out the front door and to the car, a rucksack hanging on her arm.
Daddy, hurry up! We're going to be late!
She calls out impatiently. John appears in the open doorway.
Bye, honey! Love you!
He shouts into the house. Genevieve must respond, because he closes the door behind him and makes his way to the car, quickening his speed when Sarah shouts at him again to hurry. Paulie waits for several minutes after they leave, ensuring that the car isn't returning for a forgotten item or some other reason that could take him by surprise. Then he takes his first step out from behind the tree. I waste no time mirroring him, keeping my steps light as I quickly approach him from the rear. He hears a twig snap too late. My arm is hooked around his throat before he can process my presence. It's me, Paulie. It's me. I rush out just as he prepares to maneuver out of my hold. He stills.
Ronnie, what the hell is wrong with you?
He bites out. I release him, allowing him to turn toward me with a baffled expression.
The hell you doing here, Ron? You clocking me?
He asks, now appearing wary, glancing around as if there's a target on his head. I tap his cheek roughly, then point at him. Watch what you call me, Paulie. He rubs his cheek where I slapped him, giving me a disgruntled look.
Rinaldo, he mutters.
Being the consigliere, I'm treated with the same respect as a don. Paulie knows better than to ever lay hands on me, not unless he wants to go swimming with the fishes. Plans have changed. We're to leave Genevieve Parsons be, I tell him, glancing behind him to ensure we're still out here alone. Paulie narrows his eyes, staring at me suspiciously. Growing impatient, I grip him by the shoulder and pull him after me, forcing him to walk with me back toward the street. He knows as well as I do that Angelo wouldn't give an order only to turn around and retract it within 24 hours, especially when it's clear John has not handled his debts.
You're here off the record, ain't you?
He questions. I clench my teeth, and when I don't respond right away, he gets irate.
Come on, Ronnie, Rinaldo. You know he ain't gonna just bust my chops and send me on my way. It's gonna be my head.
Angelo will not punish you for my decisions. I'll make sure of that. It'll be my head. But I have over 2 decades of friendship with Angelo, which offers me some layer of protection from his wrath. But I'm not completely immune. Angelo is the head of a powerful family, and I can only disrespect his orders so much before I become a problem. I'm taking a huge risk sticking my nose where it doesn't belong, but it's worth it. Genevieve is worth it.
You have a plan?
Paulie flicks another wary look my way, cementing that I'm doing something incredibly stupid, his words silent but clear. I hope you know what you're doing. I don't, but I do have an idea that may save my skin. After scoping out Parsons' manor and stumbling upon Genevieve, I continue to look into John. At first, he was the man who owed Angelo Salvatore thousands of dollars. Now, he's the man who's married to my girl. Eventually, I located John's place of work, discovering that he owns a bookkeeping firm in downtown Seattle. He does very well for himself, and he's acquired a large inheritance, which explains how he could afford to build a home like Parsons Manor. Now, he's broke and deeply indebted to the biggest crime family in Seattle. It was dumb luck that John works in a field that could be valuable to the Salvatores. The only thing I need to do is convince Angelo to see that. Otherwise, John and I are both dead men, leaving Genevieve alone. A bird like that won't stay single for long, and no one will ever love her the way I do.
September 11th, 1944. Angelo has connections everywhere. Many professionals are on his payroll, including the police force, politicians, and more CEOs than I can count. One of those people is a powerful banker, Lenny Giordani. He's currently staring at me like I've grown a second head. If I weren't a composed man, I'd smash my fist into his face hard enough for the design of my ring to imprint on the inside of his cheek. Let me get this right. You want to pay off the remainder of John Parsons' mortgage. Do you realize how much money that is? Lenny asks, staring at me incredulously. What gave you the impression I was an idiot? I growl.
$4,000, Rinaldo, he repeats for the third time.
I'm half blind, Lenny, not half deaf, I snap, growing impatient. Angelo pays me more than enough to cover the cost, and Lenny knows that. It's not a matter of being able to afford it. It's a matter of why I'd spend that type of money on someone like John. Lenny finally takes the hint and drops his gaze to the check lying on his desk, already written out for the remaining amount owed on Parsons Manor.
You must really love this house, he mutters.
Only the one who inhabits it. I keep that dangerous thought to myself. I know better than to reveal my weakness. It's bad enough Polly knows, and I dread the day Angelo finds out. The fewer people who know about Genevieve, the better. It's safer for both of us. Sighing, Lenny picks up the check and shakes his head.
All right, I'll get it squared away.
Thank you, I clip, standing from the chair seated in front of his desk. Then I toss a few bills onto the cherry wood, covering my fee for his services. Without a backward glance, I leave his office, feeling a small weight lift from my shoulders. Parsons Manor is paid off, and I've already settled John's past due balances on the utility bills he neglected to pay. As far as legitimate companies are concerned, he's paid up. As far as I'm concerned, he owes me now. And it's his wife I intend to collect. Chapter 18, The Phantom. September 12th, 1944. The fourth time Angelo's fist flies into the side of my face, I dig my blunt nails into my palms, just barely restraining myself from returning the favor. Alfonso would shoot me dead before I could make it halfway, so I accept the hit. Blood fills my mouth, and I'm forced to swallow it down rather than spit it on the floor at Angelo's feet. If I'm not already on the verge of eating a bullet, that would certainly have me biting one down.
You betrayed my trust,
Angelo seethes, snarling in my bruised face.
You interfered with my order, and now the swine owes me even more money.
I failed my boss, and it was intentional. Allowing Polly to take Genevieve hostage was impossible. The thought of another man laying hands on her had me seeing red, and I know that I would have put Polly down before allowing him to set one goddamn foot in her house. And how would she have reacted if he did break into her home, intent on kidnapping her? Would she have held a knife to his throat like she did to mine? I think I'd kill Polly for that alone, for having the privilege of experiencing Genevieve in such a way. When she held that knife to me, all I could think about was letting her slice through me if it meant getting closer to her. I wanted to hurt her all right, but her screams would have been in ecstasy rather than pain. All I want that woman to do is love me like I love her. I want it to be all-consuming, to be so goddamn deep a lobotomy couldn't even carve me out of her head.
This is your fault,
Angelo hisses, stabbing a finger into my chest.
Yes, boss,
I agree, working to keep my tone even. It takes a special type of man to take a hit without retaliating. I've worked hard to become that type, but I will gladly unravel the moment he threatens Genevieve.
If you were anyone else, Ronnie, anyone else, you'd be wearing cement shoes right now.
The pain in his stare hurts, Angelo has been my family longer than my own was. Our bond is thicker than blood, and I loathe putting the strain of my disobedience on our relationship. However, Genevieve doesn't deserve to get mixed up in her husband's business, and I can't find it in myself to regret my actions. And if she were anyone else, she'd be here. I respond quietly. Angelo's expression slackens, shock glimmering in his dark eyes. As long as we've known each other, Angelo has never seen me smitten with anyone. I've entertained many women, but never long enough to keep them in my bed for more than a night. He scoffs, then turns away from me and links his hands behind his back. Mona Lisa stares at me with disapproval as he paces before me. Alfonso sits in his usual spot in the chair across from his brother's desk, keeping quiet as he stares at us. He's contemplative as smoke billows from his mouth, his cigar nearly depleted.
"Bring John in!"
Angelo barks aloud. Two other lackeys, Roger and Samuel, are standing behind me, their chins high, faces slack, always on standby for instruction. One of them shuffles behind me. There's a click of the office door, and silence for a few strained beats before it swings open again. I peer over my shoulder as Roger drags a gagged John into the middle of the room and drops him unceremoniously at Angelo's feet. Muffled pleas arise from behind the gag in John's mouth, which are promptly ignored. Instead, Angelo pulls out his Colt from the back of his trousers and presses the barrel to John's forehead. John shakes his head profusely, his indecipherable begging growing louder. Angelo snarls while sobs shake John's shoulders. Truthfully, the sight brings me such immense joy, I'm nearly delirious from it. Since the moment Genevieve confessed what he did to her, I've been picturing all the ways I'd slowly torture him to death, make him cry and beg for mercy, make him suffer in unimaginable ways. Even worse, I can't look at him without imagining the act itself, and a rage unlike anything I felt before fills me every time. My hands tremble with the need to whip out my gun and shoot him myself. I clench my fists, focusing on keeping still.
"Your life for over $16,000. Something tells me it's not worth that much, but I'll make do."
Angelo spits. Just as he thumbs back the hammer of the revolver, a melodic voice whispers in my ear.
"Promise me you will never play a hand in his death."
I close my eyes, frustration building in my chest. His finger is seconds from pulling the trigger, and guilt unfurls in the pit of my stomach as Genevieve's pleas circulate in my mind.
"Even if not for me, please do it for Sarah."
Genevieve will be devastated if I stand by and do nothing while Angelo pulls that trigger. Their daughter will be devastated. And what kind of man am I to make her a promise just to allow it to be broken?
"Boss,"
I interject, stepping forward, the word tasting like acid on my tongue. The answering look from Angelo could melt the ice caps, but I don't back down. It's in my best interest to allow John to be shot dead. It would relieve Genevieve of her marriage to her abuser, and I could have her to myself. She would be mine, and only mine. However, my mother didn't raise a monster through what little parenting she offered after my father's passing. Killing a young girl's father for my own selfishness isn't a sin I'll allow myself, especially knowing that it would break Genevieve's heart. And while it is not me pulling the trigger, that doesn't remove the blood from my hands.
"He has other uses, uses that would prove him to be valuable after all,"
I say evenly.
"You have 2 seconds, otherwise I'm firing 2 bullets tonight."
a threat that I've heard countless times when pulling Angelo off the edge. I should be fearful for my life. I've seen Angelo turn his gun on a made man for less. However, I'm his consigliere for a reason, and it's typically because of my ability to rein him in from making irrational decisions at every turn. Most days, I succeed. Other days, I don't. He's an accountant, I explain. Despite his terrible poker face, he is exceptional with numbers. It's a wonder he didn't count cards. John spits out a few words that sound like, "I'm no cheat." Angelo must pick up on it too, because he casts an unreadable look his way. I've piqued his interest, though, so I forge on. If his life isn't worth his debt, let his hard work be, I continue. He can work for free until it's paid off. He has the potential to become a big earner for us. Angelo's a smart businessman, but he's a hothead, and at this moment, all his statues are facing away, which means I can't trust him to think rationally or be reasonable.
Are you asking me to give him a pass, Ronnie? You vouching for him?
I grit my teeth. For Genevieve, I'll do anything, even put my life on the line for her abusive husband. Yes, boss. He studies me closely before turning his focus to John. He sucks his teeth, seeming to contemplate my offer. All the while, my heart thuds heavily. A fraction of a second is all it will take for him to end John's life. And, admittedly, I would celebrate his death. I've done all I could to save his life. Now, his consequences are his own. Sweat pours down John's reddened face, and he stares up at Angelo with a fear that only God can put into him. His pleas are silent, but they are mighty, because a moment later, Angelo lifts his gun to the ceiling, signaling his acceptance of my suggestion. His stare stays locked onto John, though he addresses me first.
All right, Ronnie. We'll try it your way. But this deal comes with conditions.
After a beat, he continues, holding John's widened stare.
You will work off not only your debt, but also the interest you have accrued.
John's words are muffled, though it's clear enough to catch what he says.
What interest?
Angelo's subsequent grin is smarmy, and he no longer stares at John with contempt, but rather hope for an opportunity that may make him far more money than John has seen in his lifetime.
My wrath is your interest. You will take the Omerta and work for me until you become a problem.
He turns away from John, the corners of his lips stretching wider as he rounds his desk and takes a seat, adopting a casual stance as he leans back into his chair.
Believe me, John, you don't want to become a problem.
In other words, John is going to become a made man whether he likes it or not, and the only way out of this life is through death.
September 16th, 1944. Ever since I told Daisy about John, she has been sending letters more frequently throughout the months. She's damn near interrogating me about John, and I've told her everything. How his gambling habits haven't waned. His paychecks go entirely to catching us up on bills, and then we fall behind again, left with little money for eating or buying ourselves basic necessities. I also told her about that awful June night. Her response was written so angrily into the page that her pen tore through it in several spots. Some of her words were unintelligible, but I got the gist. She was seething mad and begged me to find a lawyer. But what lawyer would see it as anything other than a marital duty? As John's wife, my body is his. Even so, I couldn't bear to rip Sarah away from her father. She loves him dearly, and my husband treats her like royalty. Once I responded with a letter explaining this, she understood my position, though she didn't shy away from expressing her distaste for my husband. In the end, it does not matter that I am the receiver of all John's mistakes, because at least I have Ronaldo, wherever he is. Chapter 19, The Raven, September 18th, 1944. My diary sits on my lap, the blank page glaring at me. I have so much to say, yet I'm unable to string together an intelligible sentence when my thoughts are racing. It's been over a week since Ronaldo visited, and I've all but convinced myself that he's either lost interest or something terribly wrong has happened. Throughout the 5 or so months he's been coming around, I've gotten used to going days and days without seeing him. Yet there's a persistent feeling in my gut that something has happened. I've had my pen poised over the paper for the past 5 minutes, and just as I touch the metal tip to it, the front door opens. My heart stalls, and my muscles freeze into solid ice. Then I hear the familiar cadence of my phantom's footsteps, and it's like adrenaline has been injected into my veins. I shoot up from my chair, the journal and pen scattering across the checkered floor. I pay them no mind as I barrel toward the infuriating man who's somehow stolen my heart. My arms are around his neck in seconds, while his palm warms my lower back instinctively. Instantly, his sandalwood, orange, and tobacco scent brings me comfort. But before I can bask in the relief of seeing him again, a pained grunt slips past his lips. Pulling back, I gasp, instantly noticing the purpling skin beneath his right eye and several gashes along his cheekbone. "What happened to you?" I ask, setting a gentle palm on his cheek, my fingers lightly brushing over the discoloration.
"It's nothing, my love,"
he assures, warming my hand on his face with his own. The touch is affectionate, but I'm unable to appreciate it when I'm nearly choking on my concern. "It doesn't look like nothing."
"It's nothing I didn't deserve."
What a cryptic answer, no less from a cryptic man.
"I'm sorry I stayed away so long. I didn't want you to see me like this, but I couldn't endure another day without you."
His words ease my tightened throat like warm honey, though I can't let go of my concern. Someone hurt him, and that hurts me. "At least tell me who did this," I whisper, my brows crinkling as I study every bruise, every cut.
"My boss, he was unhappy with a decision I made."
None of his responses give me any idea of what happened, but I let it go for now. This man is like a snow globe that has frosted over. It doesn't matter how hard I shake him, he will show me nothing unless I crack him open and his contents spill out. However, I can be patient, but he can only keep me in the dark for only so long before I'll grow bored with his mysteriousness. I have a husband that has excelled at the craft, and I certainly do not need another man with that skill set. "Is there anything I can do to make you feel better?" I ask quietly. A simple question, yet I feel like it will open a door that leads to many complications. His pale eyes trail over my face and down to my throat, where my pulse thunders beneath my flesh. Can he see it? How deeply he affects me, how strongly I feel him. Tension gathers in the surrounding air, embracing the two of us like a warm blanket. His fingers slide along my cheek and into the depth of my curls, while my hand drops from his face down to his chest. I inhale a sharp breath, shivering from his gentle touch. He tugs me closer, pressing his chest into mine. He stands several inches taller, and if I lift onto my toes just a bit, it would be so easy for him to. Nothing could have prepared me for his lips crashing into mine. He wastes no time, twirling his tongue around my own in a sensual dance. While every other kiss was electrifying, This one encapsulates a storm beyond Earth's capabilities. It's cosmic, cataclysmic. A tinge of copper blooms on my taste buds, where the pressure has irritated his split lip. It does nothing to deter me. Rather, our kiss only deepens, just as I fall deeper into the cosmos. My hands glide down his chest and tear his button up out from his trousers before diving beneath the fabric. He groans as I familiarize myself with his chiseled stomach and then his defined chest muscles, which are covered in a thin layer of hair. My pointer finger whispers over his nipple, earning me a deep growl. Invigorated, I fasten his bottom lip between my teeth, nipping sharply and drawing more blood. I scarcely register his walking me backward until my back slams against a wall. The force of it causes a heavy breath to expel from my lungs. I'm granted one last sip of oxygen before his mouth demands more from me. I'm eager to oblige, giving him every ounce of me I have to offer. Fingers close around my throat, and he brings me away from the wall an inch just to slam me back against it. He rips his mouth away from mine just as I gasp when he releases my throat. Then he drags his nose along my neck, inhaling deeply.
You're brave, Mia Rosa, but I'm curious to know how brave.
He ponders, his tone devilish. His voice against my throat coaxes goosebumps to rise across my flesh like an evening tide. You've never scared me the way you should have. I breathe, my chest heaving and heart pounding. Whatever gave you the impression that I was a scared little mouse? He clicks his tongue as if chiding me.
I would guess the moment I make you squeal like one.
A moment later, his teeth are sinking into the soft spot beneath my ear. I'm unable to control the sound that bursts from my throat, high-pitched, just like a damned mouse. However, he wastes no time gloating and instead thrusts his hips into mine. His hard length presses into my stomach, expressing a different type of hunger than his teeth did.
I think you can squeal louder than that, no?
He purrs, his voice dipping impossibly deeper. My mother spoke of a voice like that, said it belonged to the ruler of hell. She warned me of this being's dangerous pull over our will and made me swear to find God during these moments. She'd be disappointed to know that I'm so delirious from Rinaldo's touch. I wouldn't be able to locate where the hell God is, let alone how to reach him. I'm convinced she was a silly woman. How could Rinaldo rule hell if he makes me see heaven? Rinaldo, I moan, feeling constricted in the clothing covering my body. It's too much and I need it off. As if hearing my silent plea, his hands shred at my blouse, tugging it out from under the waistband of my skirt before ripping it apart, sending the pearl buttons flying. The bite of metal from my zipper coming undone sounds a moment later, and the clothing sluices off my skin like water, leaving me in my undergarments and black heels. He takes a second to rake his heated gaze over my body, the black bra containing my aching breasts and the matching girdle slimming my waist, holding on to my sheer black stockings, the tops rimmed with lace. It's a different set than I wore last time, a more risque one. While the other had lace detailing, this one has sheer panels highlighting my curves. Silk conceals the parts of me that are most fun to uncover. I wore it in hopes that Rinaldo would come, just like I've been wearing other scandalous sets for the last couple days. Until today, they went to waste. I had bought this one for an anniversary that John forgot to celebrate with me. And now I'm glad for it. It feels right that Rinaldo's the first to see me in these undergarments, especially when they were intended for a husband that never seemed to appreciate me, which is the exact opposite of what my visitor is doing. His stare ravishes my body, his eyes darting over me like he can't get enough, like he'll miss a vital part of me if he doesn't scour every inch.
You are exquisite, Mia Rosa.
He rasps, his darkened gaze finally lifting to mine.
I am undeserving.
I lift my chin haughtily. I believe that's for me to decide. There's very little in life that I've had control over. My dad was too busy breaking his back as a section hand to notice me, and my mother feared God more than she loved me. When she wasn't berating me about my rebellious attitude, which would surely prevent any respectable man from marrying me, she was hammering God into my head with a vengeance crueler than the spikes that were nailed into Jesus's hands. But the harder she tried to coerce me into following in her footsteps, the less I wanted to. I didn't want to submit to a vengeful God any more than I wanted to submit to a man. Yet somehow, I fear that's almost exactly where I found myself. I may not read the Bible as a bedtime story, but I am an ant ensnared in a circle of salt. I'm trapped in the confines of these walls while my husband leaves me here to wander aimlessly. I have a life, yet I'm no less a prisoner than the ghosts that haunt these hallways. Rinaldo, he's a choice. Maybe a terrible one, but one all the same. He's the first selfish decision I've made for myself, and I can't deny how thrilling it feels. I gather every morsel of courage in my throat, then say, "You should know, this ensemble is just as beautiful on the floor as it is on me." He nods slowly, as if assessing the situation, and passes his stare over my form one more time before locking eyes with me. The one corner of his mouth lifts into a smirk, and he walks away. My mouth falls open, shock paralyzing me as I watch the infuriating man saunter toward the door. The only thing missing from his gait is a carefree tune whistling from his lips, as if he simply does not give a damn about what he's turning away from. Oh, he will not get away with leaving me like this. If he does, I swear he will never see me in such a state again. Just as my feet unglue from the floor, I chase after him. But before I can give him the worst tongue-lashing he's ever heard, he pivots toward the staircase. Craning his head over his shoulder just enough to catch my gaze, he winks, then turns and continues up the steps. Confused, but now more intrigued, I follow him. By the time I reach the top, he's halfway down the hallway. The click of my heels across the wooden floorboards echoes as I slowly trail after him. He faces my bedroom, flicks one last stare my way, then enters. Heart pounding, I pass a spare bedroom, glimpsing another figure standing within. The sudden intrusion has the erratic muscle in my chest flying up into my throat. Instinctively, I whip my stare toward the doorway, finding it empty. It was just a flash, but I know something was standing there, likely judging me for my careless decision, even more so now that I'm willing to entertain another man in my marital bed. Let the ghosts judge. Unlike them, I have a life to live, and I might as well enjoy it before I join their miserable souls in the afterlife. Swallowing down the residual fear, I reach my bedroom and find Rinaldo sitting on the edge of the chest at the foot of the bed, staring blankly at the wall before him. My vanity is directly in front of him, offering him a perfect view of himself through the gold-framed mirror. To the left of him, and directly opposite me, is a full-length mirror, which offers me an uninterrupted view of myself. Two souls, staring into our own eyes, unable to hide from the choice we're both going to make. I look away from my reflection, and my stare clashes with his. Neither of us dares change our minds.